We're holding on IE number days, the third line of the wide lines. We learned in the Mishnah. We have the case of a person with Kodiyakos, which we dealt with yesterday. The Mishnah continues in the static. If you have a person who became mute, you said the other day, for example, he had a stroke. And people asked him, should we write a get for your wife? And he nodded his head. Then we said that we have to check him out three times, and if he says yes and no to the proper answers, then we know he still has his das, and you can go ahead and write the get. The Gemara starts with the assumption that when we said that he has to answer to the things yes, yes, and to the things no, no, the Gemara is assuming that you're asking him a bunch of yes questions in sequence or a bunch of no questions in sequence. So the question is, what if, for example, he just has, he's gotten into a thing of nodding his head, or shaking his head to indicate no, he happens to be nodding his head. Tosfos talks about, we may be talking about, for example, from Rashi it comes out, actually, that, for example, he might be, every so often, every minute he's nodding his head, or every minute he's shaking his head. If you just ask him a couple of questions at fixed intervals, then that doesn't prove anything. So the answer is, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Yumi, Amar Rav Nachman, Damin, Amar V'Sirugin. Okay, so what we do is we ask him the questions with intervals. So Rashi says, Rashi learns, in other words, you don't ask him the questions one after the other, because then he might just be nodding as part of his disease. And Tosfos points out, let's say, for example, you ask him the yes questions, and we're clear that we're good on them, we still don't know. By the time we get to the no questions, maybe he's lost his mind. So we do b'sirugin. So Rashi explains that b'sirugin means interval. So we pause between the questions.
What about if he doesn't answer? And don't we check him after 2 hours or after 2 days or later on, maybe?
Yeah, I guess we could try again later, yeah. But then anyway, there has to be some point when he... Rashi explains that Sirugin means intervals, right. There are other Mepharshim who explain, I thought Tosfos says it, but no, it's not in Tosfos, it's other Mepharshim, that let's say that Sirugin means you go back and forth, a yes question and no question, a yes question and no question. And actually, Tosfos does quote from the Yerushalmi that what you do is actually, the kind of yes and no questions you ask him, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, is, for example, you start by asking him, should we write a get for your wife? Suppose he nods yes. Then we ask him, should we write a get for your mother? And we expect him to answer no, you can't write a get for your mother. And if he answers no to that, then we know we're in good shape, and then you continue. What about if then you ask him about his wife? Yes. What about should we write a get for your sister? You go back and forth like that enough times, as many times as necessary. Still the problem is, fine, what if he has something where he's nodding and shaking his head at intervals, according to Rashi, or alternately, according to the Yerushalmi? The answer is, Damin and Chad Lab, or Train Hain, or Train Lab, or Chad Hain. What we do is we ask them in groups. We ask them first a question where you expect a no, and then two questions yes, then two questions no, and one yes. That's a pattern like that, not an exact alternating pattern, because then he might just stop the alternating. Like this, if you do it with breaking up pattern, then it more randomly, then you know if he answers everything properly, you know that he knows what he's talking about. Great Rabbi Shmuel Tana, then in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught what the kind of questions you ask him. What you do is you ask him things that are appropriate to the summer during the winter, and things that are appropriate to the winter during the summer. What kind of things? We'll talk about it in a second, but Tosfos deals with the question. He's not necessarily disagreeing with the Mishnah. The difference is, though, that when you ask questions, just random yes and no questions, fine. He might, you know, he might get them, he might get them, he might not. It might just be random nodding or whatever. If you ask him things that require a little thought, what season is it, and he gives the right answers, then you know he knows what he's talking about.
Whether he's still competent.
Exactly. Right. And Tosfos wants to say that in that case, if you use the questions about summer, or use summer and winter appropriate questions, Tosfos wants to say that in that case, you don't even need the three times of each. If you ask him one summer question and one winter question, that would be enough. Other Rishonim learn differently. Okay. So the question is, my dear, what kind of questions are you asking? Ilim gluf grius dini. Are you talking about that you ask him, for example, should we put a coat on you or should we cover you with a light sheet? That doesn't work. Why? He might just be cold. But yeah, during the summer, he says, put a coat on me. Not necessarily because he's not competent, because he's cold. Same thing in the winter. Maybe he's hot. So he's asking.
Why don't we just ask him what season it is?
Okay.
So we're doing medicine.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I don't know why the Gemara is not bringing up that possibility. Maybe because what season it is. I mean, okay, you know, if you have like we're having now, a fairly mild winter, you might think of, you know,
it's winter.
Okay.
Everybody knows it's winter. If he tells you now it's summer, you know that something's wrong.
Okay. All right. Maybe.
Fair enough.
It's fair enough. I don't know. I love a peri. No, what we do instead, the Gemara continues, is you ask him about fruit. For example, Rashi said, you ask him during the wintertime, do you want cherries? They're a summer fruit. It wasn't like nowadays where you can find them in the store all year round.
Cherries?
Yes. Yeah. Or you ask him about apples. Yeah, you ask him for apples during the summer, actually. Chazarim, which is like wild apples or whatever, during the summer. Fruit that's out of season. And Joseph adds, you don't just ask him if you want cherries during the winter, for example. Because, okay, you could have cherries, you could have preserved cherries, dried cherries or whatever. You ask him, should we pick you some from the tree? And that we can use to know whether he knows what season it is. If you have a deaf person, and right now we're talking about, usually throughout Shas, Cheresh means he can't hear a deaf mute, he can't hear and he can't speak. Here we're talking about a Cheresh as just a deaf person. But he's able to speak via writing. Actually, no, we are talking about he's a deaf mute. No, he is a deaf mute. However, he wasn't born deaf. He became deaf later in life. So he did at one time have the ability. Hello. At one time he did have the ability to speak and he did have the ability to hear, but he lost it. But now he's still able to write. Now the point is, Rashi says when he originally married his wife, he was a pekeach. Therefore, he did a kiddushin, then a valid daraisa. Now the problem is, if he's considered a cheresh now, he's not going to have the ability to give a get, because his get is only going to be valid at most on a derabanan level. That doesn't take away the original kiddushin daraisa. But if he's able to speak via writing, he's able to write down on a piece of paper, write a get and give it to my wife, you plainy and plainy, then we can still consider him a pekeach. Koisim and noisim get the ishtay, then we're able to write a get and give it to his wife on that basis. Amr Rav Yosef, my kamash will answer. Rav Yosef says, what's the chiddush? Tanena, we learned in our Mishnah. Nishtatik, if a person became mute, v'amr le nichtav get le ishtacha, and they ask him, should we write a get for your wife? V'hilkin b'roshe, and he just nodded his head. V'hilkinosa shloshepam, we said we check him three times, v'amr alav l'aval hein hein harei le yichtav v'yitnu. So we see from the Mishnah that nodding is enough.
But here we're talking about something else.
Here we're talking about writing. On the face of it, it should be even better, right?
It's better because he writes the answer.
Right. Yeah, okay. So
what's the Gemara's
question? That's the question. What's the Chiddush? What's the Chiddush saying that writing is good?
We know it, that the writing is a Chiddush.
Well, at this point, if nodding is good enough, you would think writing for sure.
It's much more powerful.
That's the point. If even nodding and yes and no questions is enough, like we just said, how much more so if he actually writes out the words write a get for my wife, how much more so that should be good?
Correct. So that's
the question. What's the chiddush? Given that we have our Mishnah saying that nodding is enough, why does Rav need to tell us that writing is good also? Once you know nodding
is much more significantly.
That's the point. If you say in the Mishnah that nodding is enough, and on the basis of that you can write him again, how much more so if he writes out?
Well, wait a second. Sometimes you're going to have the reverse situation. You won't be able to nod, but when you write, everything will be clear. So you will conclude accepting just by nodding he's incompetent, and now you ask him to write, and you see no...
That's not the point. But right now in the discussion, we're assuming that if we have somebody who's competent enough to know how to nod, and we're able to write a get on that basis, how much more so if he's competent not only to nod, but to write? Okay, so Tosfos does discuss that there's actually, it's true, Tosfos says, as the Gemara is going to say now, actually, there's a difference between a person who's deaf-mute and a person who's only mute. A person who's deaf-mute, yeah, just nodding his head is not going to be enough. So that which is the Gemara's answer. How are you comparing the case of the Mishnah, which is talking about a mute person? Shiny Ilim, it's different if he's only mute and he's perfectly able to hear. There's no question he's a pikeach. If he's deaf mute, if he's a deaf mute, so yes, without Rav telling us about writing, we wouldn't know because yes, in fact, nodding in that case would not be enough. Given that he was
Makadis. But I think there's still an advantage even just a mute. The mute might not necessarily be able to nod correctly.
So obviously, if he's able to write, then that's the Gemara's point. Writing for real writing is possible. It's obviously better than nodding. We're saying for a deaf mute, the point is the Gemara's getting at is that for a deaf mute, nodding is not enough. You need writing. For a mute person, yes, either one on the face of it should be okay. Titania, in fact, we learn in a braisa, Megabav Ve'ena Shemeya Zeru Cheresh. The definition of a cheresh is. The definition of a cheresh for this purpose, not the cheresh throughout Shas, not the cheresh who's considered on a level with a shoita and a cotton, but the type of cheresh that we're talking about in this connection is somebody who's able to speak, but he can't hear. That's considered a cheresh for this purpose.
Who was able to
hear. At one time he was able to hear, therefore he was able to learn to speak, which is really the thing, actually. In the Gemara's times, and then from long after that, they really didn't have effective education for deaf people. If a person is born deaf, they would never really learn to speak. That's basically the idea why they're considered to not have complete daft. They're not able to hear, they're not able to speak, so they're not really able to communicate with anybody. There is a good deal of discussion among the Achronim of the last couple hundred years. What about, for example, somebody who is born deaf but nevertheless learns to speak or learns to use sign language or whatever? Actually, the Maharshal, for example, says that on our Gemara over here, he says that if you have somebody who's born deaf and also never learned to speak, of necessity, he's not going to learn to write either, and therefore we can't be dealing with that case. So the Rosh Hash points out that in his time, the late 1800s, he mentions a school in Vienna in his times where they taught deaf mutes to write. In later times, you have with
gradations of deaf mutes.
So indeed, in the last 150 or thereabouts years, there's been a good deal of discussion among Achronim about the status of deaf and deaf mute people in halacha. If sometimes they are able to learn to speak, after all, Helen Keller being a famous example of that. Sometimes they never learn to actually speak, but they learn how to use sign language. There could be the case over here, we're talking about they learn to write. There's a lot of discussion about the pros and cons of it in halacha, when they might be considered like pitchim and when not.
It's not a black and white situation.
That's the point, yeah.
There's different, there's a whole range.
Yeah, and there's also Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, for example, where he talks about somebody who's able to hear using hearing. He's able to hear using hearing aids. What's his status in halacha? And he says, if he learns to speak, then fine, we can consider him a speaking person. We can consider him a cheresh, like we're talking about over here in the Mishnah. So he can't be yotzei tzkiyas shofar, let's say, but he can't be most of the other people, but he's still a pikeach as far as most Mishnahs. Yeah. Anyway, so cheresh is so medaba ve'ena shemeya zeru cheresh, somebody who can speak but who can't hear, which again, in the Gemara's times, would mean somebody who became deaf later in life. They originally started out hearing. Zeru cheresh, that's the definition of a cheresh for this purpose. Shemeya ve'ena medaba zeru ilim, if it's the other way around, if he can hear but he can't speak, then that's the definition of ilim. V'zev zeharen kepichin chol debrem. Both of them are considered like pichin, like normal people for all purposes. So that's the case where the Mishnah, for example, is telling us that once we see the guy nods correctly on the yeses and the noes, then we know he's in good shape. Not the same thing necessarily as what you're talking about, as Rav's case, where he's both deaf and mute right now. Where yes, originally in life he was able to hear normally and he was able to speak normally, but now he's lost both abilities. Not necessarily, if it weren't for Rav's statement about him being able to write, we wouldn't know that from the Mishnah. It's a different kind of case. Okay, the Gemara asked him, the Medaba Vein.
Can that assessment be made by rabbis or by doctors?
Lachora by either, I don't know. Lachora by either. Actually, there's an interesting other discussion that one of the Achronim, I think the Shevet Alevi, brings in his Trovus about the doctor need, the kind of checking that we're talking about over here involving asking him yeses and noes or whatever, or is it good enough, for example, to do an EKG on him, do a neuropsychological exam on him or something, you know? Okay. Anyway. How do you know that those are the definitions? How do we know that the definition of a cheresh is somebody who can speak but not can't hear, and a person who can hear but can't speak is an ilim? We have a pasuk in Tehillim. V'anik cheresh le'eshma, David HaMelech says on himself, I'm like a deaf person who doesn't hear when people are making fun of me. U'cheilim le'yivtachbiv, like a mute person who doesn't open his mouth to answer back. So you see, that's the definition of cheresh and ilim.
Didn't we know that before David HaMelech?
No, if not, then maybe not. I mean, the same way as usually throughout Shas, the definition of cheresh means both, that he can't hear and he can't speak, you wouldn't know without this pasuk. The Ibo is same, or another possibility, you could say, how do you know what the word Elim means? Kedamri Inchi, you could say that the word Elim, it corresponds to the expression that people use about a mute person. Ishtikil Milule, his words have been taken away. So Ishtikil Milule is sort of like an abbreviation for that of the word Elim. You have the Aleph, the Lamed, and the Mem there. So therefore, from that also, you can realize that the word Elim means somebody who can't speak, and therefore, by elimination, a Cheresh must be somebody who can't hear. Continue to the Gemara. Amar Rav Zeira, e kashali ha kashali. Okay, actually, the problem that I have with what Rav Kahana is saying in the name of Rav is rather a little bit different. My problem is taka not what the chiddush of it compared to our Mishnah. You're right. You have a point. A person who can do neither is on a different level than the elam of our Mishnah. The problem is like this. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now the pasuk says im lo yagid. The pasuk says that if a person person knows Eidos for somebody else, and the other person tells him, come to Beis Din and testify on my behalf. He swears he doesn't know the Eidos. Later on, if it turns out that he was lying and he wants to do tshuva, the pasuk says, im lo yagid, if he doesn't tell, the nos avoyne, then he bears his guilt, and when he wants to do tshuva, he has to bring a korban for it, a korban olivier. So the expression, im lo yagid, is tapl ilim sheni yochol lahagid. The Abraisa says the word im lo yagid, if he doesn't say, comes to exclude an ilim, a mute person, she'en yochel lahagid, since he's not able to speak. So an ilim, if he were to, if for example, the other guy were to tell him, I know that you know Eidos on my behalf, will you come tell me in Beis Din, I'm making you swear, I'm putting you under a shvua, that you don't know Eidos for me.
And knowing Eidos, what is that?
Knowing Eidos, for example, you know, previous, I once lent so-and-so money. It doesn't, yeah, can you testify on my behalf in Beis Din? And then what did he do? The case is, Mashabiyachani, he says, I want to make you swear. You claim you don't know it. I want to make you swear to the truth of that. And if the guy answers, Amen, that's considered, he has accepted the Shavuah on himself. And if later on it turns out he's lying, that's when he's chayav to the Shavuah. In this case, the guy is an Elim. So you make him swear. He nods his head, exactly. And we're saying, the Benaisa is telling us that he's not chayev for the korban on the shvur. Now the problem is, that's the problem Reb Zeira says I'm having with Rav's statement about him being able, about that if he writes, then that's good enough. Why should we say he's potter? Ho yochol la'agid b'techa ksav. He's able to write. We said that writing is considered, therefore he still has his faculties. So in that case, let him be chayev because of the fact he could have written his Eidos and sent it to Beis Din, and he's not, and therefore we should make him chayev.
How do they know this? He's deaf.
He's not deaf. We're talking about he's mute. He's mute. When at one point he was there, he's an ilim. So he was there when Reuben lent Shimon money. Now Reuben, yeah, he heard about it. Yeah. So, but we're saying because he can't speak, he's potter from the shvua, from the korban shvua. Why? Chori can write. So that's the problem I have. Omalei Abaya, Eidus Kamritz. Abaya tells him, how can you think to ask a question from a case of Eidus? Shiny Eidus is different when it comes to Eidus. The Torah says that Eidus has to be verbal, but not via writing. So the Torah says that the Torah, Alpi Shnayim Eidim, or Shlosha Eidim, it means on the mouth of. So yes, it means that they have
literally
to actually. Okay, so we learn from that. Otherwise, the Torah could have used a different expression. Lefi or whatever. Okay, fine. I don't know. Whatever the Torah could have used. Yeah.
What? Give us an example.
I don't know. I'm not. Okay, the Torah could have found something. I don't know. Divrei Shnei Eidim. I don't know. Whatever. You could have found something. Whatever. Alpi teaches us that it has to be Dafka Alpe. Now, Tosfos mentions over here very briefly that in Ksubas there's a long discussion about this question. In that case, if we're saying the Pim Volim Piksavim, how does Shtaros work? How does the whole concept of Eidus in a Shtar work? So there's a considerable discussion about it among Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, but Rambam, many others deal with this issue. Among the answers are, Rashi says that the difference is, with Shtaros, it's the normal way of giving Eidus in these kinds of things is by writing it in a Shtar. And before I should explain a couple of possibilities what Rashi means, one of them being the whole purpose of a shtar is you want the Eidus to be available for a long time to come. Necessarily, you have to write it. But when we're talking about Eidus coming to Beis Din and saying what happened or whatever, that it needs to be verbal. So there's a difference. Basically, Rashi says there's a difference between whether you wrote it down at the time versus later on when you're coming after the fact testifying Beis Din, then it has to be verbal. So it just talks about over there about other
things. If you wrote it down at the time.
If you wrote it down at the time, then it can be a shtar. That's how a shtar works. But if you write
it, written,
then to write it later, that would be that can be PM11 fix stuff. Tosfos over there talks about other possibilities, one of them being that maybe Rabbi Natan says over there, yes, as a matter of fact, an aide can send his aides to Beis Din in a shtar, no matter what, even if it's a while later. What is our Gemara saying that Mipiyim Velemi Piksavim means the aide has to be capable of saying it verbally. If he's capable of saying it verbally, then we can also allow him to write it. But if he's not capable of speaking it, then we can't accept it in writing either. And then the Rambam has another shita.
That would be an
Elam. Yeah, that would be an Elam. That's what we're talking about. So therefore, an Elam can't, yeah. And the Rambam has yet another shita that Bechlal Daraisa, there's taka only a concept of verbal Eidus. The whole concept of Eidus and a shtar, according to the Rambam, is only Dirabanan, in order to facilitate commerce and whatever. Anyway, so therefore, so Abaya says to the Bzeda, so you can't prove anything from the fact that an Elam is potter from Shavuot to Eidus. An Elam is not capable of doing Eidus and Basin in the first place. Okay.
Even for he's the only one and saw a capital murder and...
Yep. Well, if he's the only one, you can't execute the guy anyway. One aid is not enough, but yeah. Well, however, the Gemara says, in that case, I have a contradiction on that. A Braita says, Kishem Shabot Kenoisa Gittin, just as a person can be checked out as far as Gittin, or case in our Mishnah, where he's mute, and when you check whether he still is competent, Kach Bot Kenoisa L'masois L'matonois, so also we test him in the same way when it comes to Maso Maten, as far as buying and selling, Ula Aegeus, and as far as Aegeus, Ulyurushas, and as far as Yurusha. Now Katoni Mias Adius. So we see we're talking about testing him about whether he's capable of testifying. So you see that a mute person is capable of testifying. So what's Abaya saying to Rav Zera that a mute person is not capable? Right, because he's only going to accept. Omer Rav Yosef, Amen Yomi, Omer Rav Sheshes, the Eidus Isha Da Kilogor Abonon. What we're talking about over here is a specific type of Eidus. The Eidus that a woman's husband has died to allow her to remarry, which as we learned at the end of Yavamas, that kind of Eidus that Abonon made big kulos in. They allowed a woman to give Eidus, even a normal, even a one aid, even an Eved, even a Shifcha, Messiah, Fitoma, etc., all the details we talked about over there. So then, yes, we'll make an exception and allow a person to write his Eidus. As long as we find that as long as we check him out, we do the yes and no test, find that he's competent, fine. If he writes out, so plenty, then plenty die, then fine, we can accept that. But not Eidus that would be needed on a Daraisa level. Okay, well, it's on a Yerushas, okay. No, well, so allow her to remarry is Daraisa, obviously, yes. But we learned in Yavamas that you need Eidus for it the concept that you need Eidus for it is the Rabbanan. And we said, we're Meiko because Isha Daiko Mitzvah. We assume that she's not going to be married unless she carefully checks into the situation and is firmly convinced that her husband is dead because of all the penalties that we'll have otherwise. Next, the Gemara asks, Vakatani Yerushas. What about, we're saying Yerusha? Yerusha, on the face of it, is something Daraisa. So the Gemara is assuming at this point that Yerusha means that he's coming and giving Eidus, that Yaakov bequeathed such and such to his children, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. That would be an Eidus that's needed on a Daraisa level. And yet you're saying an Elim can do it. Obviously, how? By writing. It means writing is good. The answer is, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Yerusha of his own firstborn son. What does that mean? Rashi says it means, suppose that he wants to, now like this, we know in Atorah, the Bechor is supposed to get a double portion. What happens if the father is an Elim, he wants to deny his firstborn son the double portion. He wants to give him an equal portion to everybody else. For that, we can accept it. For that, we can accept it in writing. Because that's something that's his own property. The same way as we can accept his Eidus writing as far as allowing him to buy and sell in his own property. The same thing this as far as disposing of his estate. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns differently that it's rather we're talking about the situation where he's giving Eidus in writing that this child is a Bechor. Like this, we didn't know among his children which one is the Bechor. The Torah teaches us, ki yas ha-bachur yakir, that the father has the ability, the Torah trusts him, to say, zebni b'chur. So like this, if he does it in writing, that's also acceptable. Well, if he does it, if he wants it done lachamisa, no, of course not, because at that point the Yerushim and Atorah kicks in. But if he wants to give it while he's still alive, or the Matnas Chivra or whatever, he has the ability to. It's not a good thing to, and the Gemara in Bava Basra has some sharp things to say about it, but it is allowed. Maybe giving an extra, whatever it is, by equalizing the portion, yeah. It says that you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to disinherit a child, even if he's not noyik kishura, even if he's off the derech. You're not supposed to take away the double portion from the bechor. Okay, katani miyas l'masoes ulamatona. It's fine. Let's go back earlier in the braisa. It mentioned that we can trust his edus, the pashtus in writing, as far as maso matan, as far as business. My lav la'alma, l'chur, that means, again, that he's testifying about somebody else's business, that he's testifying that Reuven sold this field to Shimon, or what have you. The answer is no. No, we're talking about his own property. So you don't have a contradiction against what Abaye is saying, that it's very limited where we can accept his Eidus v'chsav. A normal situation of Eidus, you can't, because v'piyim v'lo v'chsavam. Only in these specific cases where it involves his own property or where it's an issue, did Abonim, like Eidus Isha, then we can accept it. Unless it's made to be. Fine, I have another contradiction. A Braita says, Cheresh lehocho v'yachar remizoysav achach b'tzoysav v'achach ksav yodeh. When it comes to a Cheresh, we don't follow his remizos, his hints, his gestures, or k'pitzoysav, his opening and closing his mouth. We also don't follow his writing. Elav metalplin, only when it comes to metalplin. Avaloy legitin, but not when it comes to gitin. Meaning, again, we're talking about the case that we started with at the beginning of the Amud, where his kiddushin originally were daraisa. Now he became a cheresh, and now he wants to be megaresh based on. He wants to give instructions to be megaresh based on nodding or based on gestures or writing or whatever. We say it's no good. Rav is telling us it's fine. This braisa is saying it's no good. The answer is tanoi. It's actually a machlokas tanoi. This question of whether you can rely on his writing. Tanya, because the braisa continues. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, b'met v'rma m'mecheresh meikarei. When is this talking about that you can't accept his gestures or his writing or what have you? Is when he was a cheresh to begin with. So then, since he never had das, since he never had a clear das. Which actually, it could mean we could be talking about a case where he was born deaf, but actually, as the Marshal says, we could even be talking about he became deaf at a very young age. So maybe he first he heard sounds at the beginning, but he doesn't have da'as, a person doesn't have clear da'as until he's 13. Sometime before 13, he became deaf. So therefore, there was never a time in his life when he had clear da'as. And so then we don't accept his writing or his gestures or what have you. But if he was originally a pikeach, so he learned to write when he had a clear mind, he was at some point after his bar mitzvah, he was still of sound mind, and he learned how to write. And later on he became deaf. Fine. Who kosev v'hein chosmin? Then he can write. He can write a get, for example, or he can write instructions to give a get, whatever, and they can sign it. So you see, Reb Shimon. Obviously. But the point is, Reb Shimon Gamliel is making that distinction between whether he was deaf originally or whether he was deaf congenitally or at a very young age versus when he became deaf later. So that's the opinion that Reb Kahana Amar Rav is following.
Okay, so that's a test.
No, because you have some.
Okay, so that's a test. If you're right, that's a test.
That's right.
Does that work? Okay.
No, we said Kosev. If he himself writes the get, or he himself writes the instructions, then we don't need the yes and no test. That's what we said originally. Yeah.
But then we say afterwards about pikeach. Then he's chorish.
Right, Kosev and chosman, and he's able to write the get. And once we see that he writes it or that he writes the instructions for it, that itself shows that he's a clear mind.
He can write, but he can still not necessarily have all the understanding.
But that's what Rav said at the beginning. That the Yachol Adam Rechazak Sab, that if he's able to speak via writing, he's able to give instructions via writing, then that's good enough.
What's one opinion?
No, that's the opinion that we're saying. That's what we're saying. That fits with Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion over here.
Yet he could write, but still not be completely clear about what he's
so that's what I was mentioning before, that the Maharshal says, if a person is born deaf and never learned to speak either, of necessity he's never going to learn to write properly. Again, that's what the Rashash and maybe some of the Rachonim talk about, that nowadays with modern education that's not the case necessarily, but yeah. No, so that's, if he was a Cheresh Meikari, then yeah, he's Nisuin only Zerabonim. That's the Gemara is going to discuss that in a minute. But if he became a cheresh later, yeah, he's originally nisuin, was there a raisa? Okay, so the question is, a cheresh meikarei loy? That's exactly your question, yeah. What's the problem? He's a cheresh, if he's a cheresh to begin with, that you're saying that him writing is not good enough. Kishem shkoin tzibir amizah, kach metziah bir amizah. Look, how did he get married in the first place? He had the gesture, and that's considered the midrabbana, and that's considered a valid enough marriage, so that he can divorce her via gestures also, yeah. The answer is Ibi Ishtar Yochanami. You're right. If it's talking about his own wife, then you're right. Then there's not an issue. Hoch, Maya's going to be a Vimtai. But what we're talking about over here is this is his Yavama. His brother was married to her. His brother died. Now he has to be Miyab her. Okay, the question is Yavimtai Miman. Well, because the difference is, the Gemara is going to spell out the details, but basically if his brother was a Pekeach, then his Kedushin with her were a full Kedushin. If his brother was originally a pikeach when he married her, his kedushin is a full kedushin. Later on, when she becomes a shemeres yavam, when there's a zika, the zika is also a full zika. As opposed to, yes, if his brother...
The fact that he's being paired in between?
The fact that the original brother was impaired in between doesn't matter. The fact is the original kedushin, that he's in the kaddish, we're good. The distinction the Gemara is going to make is whether the brother himself at the time of the kedushin was a cheresh. If he himself was a cheresh, then again, it was moitzi biramiza, machnis biramiza, moitzi biramiza, the whole thing is only jabam. That's the Gemara. Yuvim to miman. This Yuvama, who was the original brother who was married to her that we're dealing with?
Was miyadam her and now you want to give a guess?
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. No. Well, it could be either one, actually. No, Rashi actually explained. Rashi explains we're talking about chalitza. If he's a cheresh, okay, if she was married to the brother originally only Dirabanan, Birimiza, then fine. I mean, the original Kiddushin was only Dirabanan, the Zika is only Dirabanan. Therefore, you know, the Chalitza can be valid Dirabanan as well. But if the Zika is Deraisa, based on an original Kiddushin Deraisa, he can't do Chalitza. He's not able to save Lechafasilafasta, which is an essential part of the procedure, as we learned in Yavamas. Therefore, he's not able to do Chalitza. He would have to marry her, have to do Yibum, and never do Chalitza. Not only never do Chalitza, he wouldn't be able to give her a guest either for the same reason. As long as he's a Chesh. He'd have to stay married to her of necessity, yeah. We learned about this in Yibum, I think it was in a quarter over here, yeah. So that's the question. Yibim to Miman. Who was the original husband of this wife, of this Yavama. If his brother was a Cheresh, what's the problem? Again, just like his brother married her through Remiza, then he's able to divorce her, or he's able to divorce her through Remiza, so what's the problem? No, so we have to say his brother was a Pikeach at the time he married her. So the Kedushin was Daraisa. The Zika, therefore, when the first brother dies, is also Daraisa. Now, the Cheresh doesn't have the ability to cancel that by Chalitza, because the Cheresh doesn't have the ability to do Chalitza, nor can he give a get, because his get would only be valid to Rabbanan, that can't take away Zika Daraisa. Therefore, of necessity, he has to do the Yibum, and they stay married. But that's what we're saying over here when we say, when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Bacheresh meikare," we can't accept his writing as valid instructions to give a get. That's the case we're talking about.
Yibum, you don't need to have that.
No, we learned in Yevamos, Ben B'Shogeg, Ben B'Oynes, Ben B'Rotzen. Yeah. But Chalitza, you do. Chalitza is not so much you need das. Chalitza is not so much you need das. You have to be able to say loichapatsu with that. Yeah.
But Yibum, you don't have to understand anything.
Nope. We learned in Yavamas, that right, even Oynus, Shogeg, whatever. There's no das for Yibum. Okay, the Ibayisema, or the Gemara says another possibility. No, you could even say we are talking about that this Yavama was married to his brother who was also a Cheresh. You're asking then what's the problem? Why can't he give a Chalitza? The whole marriage is only Derabanan anyhow. The answer is Ugzera, Altu Achiv Cheresh, Altu Achiv Pikeach. Yes, but we don't want to allow him to do Chalitza with her because you may confuse that with the case where his brother was Pikeach, where his Chalitza is no good. Okay, the question is Yochi Ishtei Nami. Fine, by the same logic, why don't we say his own wife? Why don't we say Ugzera that he can't divorce his own wife because we may confuse that with the case of divorcing or giving Chalitza to his Yavama? The answer is okay. Yevinti Mechlefa. It's easy enough to confuse two cases of Yavama, one where she was married to Pekeach and one where she was married to a Cheresh. Ishtei Yevinti Mechlefa, but a wife is not easily confused with a Yavama. They're two completely different cases. Okay. Question is, when we guys win a Cheresh or Pekeach, you're going to really say, according to this last answer, that we make such a Gzeira, that we don't want him to allow him to give a get to an Ishtei Cheresh, to do Yivum with her and then give her a get, even though that should be allowed? Because you may confuse it with the case where his original brother was a Pekeach. Well, it's not, but we learned in the Mishnah Yavamah, so we went through all the different cases over there, involving Cherushim and Pekeachim. We had the case, Shnei Achim Cherushim, the son Shnei Achoyis Pekeachim, two brothers who are both Cherushim, who are married to two sisters who are Pekeachim, who are fully hearing and who are able to hear and speak, or it could be that the two women are cheshes, or it could be one's a pikachas, one's a cheshes. Doesn't really matter because the point is, since both brothers are cheshim, neither of them has the ability to marry them daraisa anyway. All of their marriages of them are beremiza, and it's only zirabanan. So therefore, it doesn't really matter the status of the respective women. Because if it's zirabanan, then it's been canceled by something else, zirabanan. Therefore, in other words, that's the point we're saying over here in the sugya. In other words, if you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. Both of them are cherushim, so they both were only mitadish v'remizah, which is only the rabbanim. If Reuven dies, what we're saying is that what it is is the mission is going to continue. Because two sisters, therefore they're both part of Chalitza and Yibum, because it's the sister of your wife, Achos Ishtei, as you learned in Yavamos. But suppose that it wasn't a case of sisters, as the mission is going to continue. Let's say, for example, then if it was non-sisters, unrelated, so Shimon can't do Chalitza with Reuven's wife, but what he can do is he can do Yibum with her, then he can divorce her with a guest. The get is not going to be valid on a Daraisa level. Fine, her marriage to Reuven wasn't on a Daraisa level to begin with anyway. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Whereas if it was, then you have a problem. Yeah. Or similarly, if you have two sisters who are Cherushes, which again, they were only able to be married by Remiza, because Kiddushin requires their das, and they didn't have complete das, so it was only Bar Mitzvah. Nesur is the Shnei Achen Pichin, they're married to two brothers who are Pichin, or the Shnei Achen Cherushin, or two brothers who are Cherushin, or the Shnei Achen Echad Pekeach Echad Cherush, or one brother is Pekeach and one is Cherush. In all of these cases, Harei Lepchotus Min HaChalitza Min HaYibum, in all these cases, both women are Potter from Chalitza and Yibum, because one is his wife, and the other one is his wife's sister, and then we learned in Yivamos that they're Potter in that case. But if they were unrelated women, the one of them died, the other one, again, can't do chalitza because he's a cheresh, or she's a cheresh, as the case may be. But yichnesu, therefore they have to marry them, they have to do yibum with them. And then, then if they want to divorce them with a get, then they're able to, because a get of a cheresh, which is dirabanan, is able to cancel the kiddushin, which originally were dirabanan as well. The point of that is, we see from this Mishnah, that we're not saying don't allow it in the case of a cheresh because you may confuse it with the case of a pekeach, where the original brother and his wife were both pitchim, and then when cheresh does yibum with one of them, he can't give a get, because a get derabanan can't cancel kedushin deraisa. So you see, you don't make such a gzera that we may confuse pitchim and cheresh. You're right. The clear answer is we have to say, like our original answer, that the case is, the case that Rav Shimon Gamliel was distinguishing between someone who was originally a cheresh versus someone who became a cheresh later in life is the difference whether, it's not a difference as far as his own wife, it's rather a difference of with a Yavama, like we said, but it has to be a case where the Yavama was the wife of his brother who was a Pekeach. So it's not a matter of Xeris or anything, it's just a matter of if his brother was a Pekeach, so with his own wife, with his own wife, fine. If he was originally a cheresh when he married her, then he can divorce her b'rimiza, same thing. And if he was a pekeach originally, where then the marriage is zeraisa, then he's able to write and divorce her that way because then he's still competent. When do we say that if he was a cheresh meikara, you have a problem? Would only be the case where he was miyabim the wife of his brother who was a pekeach, and she's a pekachas, where it was a marriage daraisa, and the zika is daraisa, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to undo after the yibum. He doesn't have the ability to undo that with a get, which would only be valid enough on him.
What happens if he was a cheresh to begin with, and then he recovered and became a pekeach?
Okay, so then if he's already married, so at this point his wife is not married to him at a daraisa level. They would have to redo the kiddushin in order for it to be a valid marriage daraisa.
So if they redo the kiddushin and becomes again a cheresh, what happens?
Fine. They did kiddushin while he was a pekeach. We're back to the case, though. We're back to the case that it was a marriage daraisa. Omer Rav Yechanan, chalukin olav chaver of Arab Shimon Gamliel. This that we said in the Braisa, we had the Tanakama who just said in the Braisa that a cheresh, you don't accept his handwriting when it comes to gittin, and Rav Shimon Gamliel distinguishing between whether he was a congenital cheresh or whether he became a cheresh later in life. So Rav Yechanan said, you should know that the Chachamim are disagreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel in that. Don't think Rav Shimon Gamliel is just coming to clarify that the Tanakhama just said in a generic way that you don't accept the Cheresh's handwriting as for Gittin, and Rav Shimon Gamliel saying, actually, you should know there's a difference. No, he's actually arguing with them. They would say there's no difference, whether he's a Cheresh originally or not, which would go against what Rav said. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is disagreeing with them. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you can prove that from a Mishnah that we learned in that we learned also in Yavamos. It said over there, nishkes lo yotzi, that if the woman became a shota after she was married, lo yotzi, then he's not allowed to divorce her. Nishkes meloshem shota. So she became a shota. So now remember, you don't need the das of the woman for gerushin, but. Nevertheless, it actually explains, as I was going to go on to say, midrabanan, you're not to divorce her. Now, by the way, there are two different cases of shaita. There's a case called eni yadas lishmo gita, where she doesn't even have the das to keep her get. That you're not able to divorce her even daraisa, because we learned in Yevamos over there, because you have a positive that says v'shilchom ebeta, that you divorce her and you send her out of your house. So she has to have the minimal amount of das to understand that once she's been sent away, she's not returning. If she doesn't even have the ability, lishmer es gita, then you don't even have the ability to divorce her daraisa. There's something else, though. There can be a case where your das lishmos gita, fine, she understands what a get is, but she's not capable of taking care of herself and preventing people from treating her hefker and being mezana with her.
In which case,
midrabbana, you can't divorce her. Midrabbana, you'd be able to, but midrabbana, you can't. So that's what we're saying. So the Pleiser says, the Mishnah rather says, there in Yavamas, nishtes lo yotzi, if she became a shoita after she got married, he's not allowed to divorce her, midrabbanan, because we don't want that, you know, that people are going to be noiv mineg hefker. Nischarish hua nishtata. Then, what about if he became a cheresh or he became a shoita? The Mishnah doesn't just say lo yotzi; it says lo yotzi olamis. He should forever not divorce her. Now, my olamis. What is the word olamis adding? No. What is the word olamis? It's not adding deraisa. Lav afagav yochladav mekechatzav. Luchura. That comes to teach us this din that the rabbanon would hold even if he's able to write instructions to give a get. Nevertheless, the olamis is adding that we can't even do that.
And that's what we see. That
so that's, therefore we see from that that the chachamim must necessarily be agreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel. I'm gonna papa. Ilav dashmin and Rav Yechanan. So the papa says, actually, if Rav Yechanan had not told us, then no, have I'm in it. Rav Shimon Gamliel approaches the time of the Tanakhama who does. No, you would have thought actually Rav Shimon Gamliel is just coming to clarify what the Tanakhama is saying and not disagreeing with him. What about a bias diuk from the word Elomis? You would say, well, my Elomis. No, you would understand the word Elomis differently. Afagab de chazinale de choris. That you could have a case where you can see the person is very sharp. Fine, we're not talking about whether he's able to write or not. You can clearly see that he still has all his mental faculties. Nevertheless, you would say, since he's a cheresh, then he doesn't have the ability to divorce anymore. In other words, he's saying you can't necessarily prove from that Mishnah that the issue is the Chachamim versus Rav Shimon Gamliel, his ability to write. It could be more generally. Do we see that he definitely still has all his faculties, but nevertheless, the Chachamim would say, nevertheless, the Chachamim, and maybe even Rav Shimon Gamliel, would say that no, it doesn't matter, no matter how charif we see he is, nevertheless, he still doesn't have the ability to divorce on a deraisa level. So only because Rabbi Yechanan is telling us that actually Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is arguing with Chachamim, do we realize that there's an actual machlokes over here. Inami, or another possibility you could say, l'chidu Rabbi Yitzchak. You could say that the word olamis is teaching us, the diuk of that teaches us what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. That there's a difference between the ability to divorce, there's a difference between whether you're able to divorce on a daraisa level, but the chachamim don't want you to on the zerabbanan level, or whether you're not even able to on a daraisa level. So I'm going to be talking. Dvar Torah shoyta miskareshes. Mina Torah a shoyta would be able to be divorced. In the case where, as we just said, where she's yadas lishmeres gita, where she has the ability to guard her get and to understand what a get is. She keeps it, in other words, because on face of it, that should be no different than divorcing a pikachas against her will. You don't need the da'at of the woman for gerushin. So therefore, a shoita who's your da'at, lishmeres gita, should be no different than that. So why did the chachamim say you can't? Because you don't want people to treat her hefker. So therefore, in other words, the point of the word olamis versus not would be in the case of the point is not necessarily to tell us the machlokes, not necessarily to imply the machlokes of the chachamim versus Rav Shimon Gamliel. You could argue that in the case of the shoita, the Mishnah is not telling us the word olamis in order to imply that there's a difference. But did I say you would have been able to divorce her? It's only the rabbanon that are preventing you shalom yirin gvobin again. As opposed to the man who became a cheresh or a shoita, there it's daraisa, he's not able to divorce. So you wouldn't say necessarily that Olamis is telling us the chachamim versus Rav Shimon Gamliel, the situation where he's able to write. It might be telling us the difference between what you're able to do daraisa versus what you're not even able to do daraisa. Mishnah says, Amrulon nichtev get leishtecha. If you have a case where people said to someone, and here we're not talking anymore about a person with kodiakos or an ilam or something, here we're talking about, Rashi says, we're talking either a healthy person or shchiz mera, who we know for a fact still has all his faculties. The Tosfos pointed out, you know, we had a Tosfos yesterday that pointed out that with a Shechiv Menah you may also need to do the Bidikus in order to make sure that he hasn't lost his mind. In the case of a Bori, you don't need that. Anyway.
Time to do the Zikai must
doesn't take that long, but whatever. No, actually, what Tosfos points out is actually in the case of a Shechiv Menah, you need to, even once he gave the instructions to write it, given that we said in the Gemara yesterday, we had Rabbi Yochanan versus Rish Lakish, whether you're able to give a get when the guy is a Shoita, and we said actually everybody agrees that you can't, while he's a Shoita, just Rish Lakish, distinguish between a Purdiyakos and a run-of-the-mill Shoita, then yes, when it comes to a Shechiv Menah, even after you've written the get, you still need to make sure he still has his faculties before you actually deliver it. Otherwise, you have the same problem. Anyway. So the situation over here is...
Bechorah
would have to be the same thing, the three times, or the asking about seasonal foods, or whatever, yeah. You could have the ordinary situation where he just writes the get to take effect right away. Later on, as we go through the parak, we're going to talk about various scenarios where he said it should take effect right before he dies, or 30 days from now, or we're going to have all those details. They asked him, shall we write a get for your wife? And he tells them, yes, write it. So then they, the people that he spoke to, told the sofer to write, and they told the edim to sign. So they wrote the get, they signed it, they gave it back to him, and then he actually takes that get and gives it to her. No good. How do I get bottle? It's a no good get. He himself has to tell the sofer to write it and the edim to sign it. No, it doesn't matter. The point is, that's what we're saying, that the instruction. What we're going to discuss in the Gemara is basically, first of all, the Gemara is going to later, we'll get to tomorrow, the Gemara is going to revisit this business about him writing that we were just discussing in the previous story. But here we're not even getting into that yet. It's the fact that we talked about this a lot in the previous parak, that the instructions to the edim and to the sofer have to come directly from the husband. In this case, they went through a third party. That's what we're going to be discussing, the mili, minser, and the shliach, or not, the omer imru. We're basically revisiting that topic. Incidentally, here's the place where Rashi mentioned, where Rashi holds that this parak comes before the previous one. So for Rashi, this is the first place the Gemara is dealing with it. For Tosfos, it's the second place. And actually, the Tosfos points out over here, there's detail, as the Gemara goes through the discussion, there's certain details the Gemara doesn't get into, and Tosfos says that proves this Perek comes second. That's why the Gemara already dealt with them in the previous Perek, six blocks ago. We don't need to go through all the details again. Anyway. Okay, so the Gemara says, time of the Lo'am Atzinu. Now, on the face of it, what's the problem in the Mishnah? The problem is that he didn't actually say, give the get. And you have the problem that when he says kisvu, he means, as we've discussed a couple of times already, that there's the matter of kisufa, that he's embarrassed to say that he doesn't know how to write it himself, so he doesn't want other people involved. That was a Abaye's explanation earlier in the Masechta, that we had the whole business, which the Gemara is going to take up again over here, really minser on a low minser on a shliach. So, on the face of it, though, the Mishnah would imply that if he said, give the get, without saying the word kisvu, then that would be fine. You can go ahead and have third parties write the get and deliver it. Now, that seems to be according to the mayor, who says that you're able to give over verbal instructions to a shliach, which we learned in the previous parak. Say ema sefer, but then look at the next part of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, that he has to explicitly tell the sefer personally to write the get and the edim to sign it. Asan Rabbi Yosi. Now that seems to go according to Rabbi Yosi. I'm a mili loymim sur moshliach. So that you can't give over mili. You have to give over the instructions that have to be given directly
to the
sefer and the yeah. So Rav Shira Meir, the Sefer Rabbi Yosi. So what are you going to say? The first line of our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Meir, and the second line is according to Rabbi Yosi. Usually you don't assume that. You could say Rav Shira Meir, the Sefer Rabbi Yosi. Sometimes we have that. Another answer, though. Abaya, I'm a cooler Rabbi Meir. You know, you could say the whole Mishnah is according to Rabbi Meir. The Hoch, Mayaskin, and the Lamb of Tanu. The case in our Mishnah is, the case in our Mishnah, in the second part of the Mishnah, is that he doesn't say the word Tanu. He says, when we say that he says to the sofer, he has to say to the sofer personally, means that if he says kisvu, if he says kisvu, that regardless of the first case, well, yeah, so both cases in the Mishnah would be, in other words, when he's saying ksovu. The first case, whereas when he says ksovu, and they tell the sofer, the second part of the Mishnah is also talking about the same kind of thing, that he, even without being prompted, he says kisvu, but he needs to say it to the sofer himself. So it amounts to the same thing, in other words.
The Mishnah talks about him saying it to...
So if he says, what we'd be saying is, if he says kisru, so if he says, that's the thing. Rav Meir is saying like this. If he says tnu, then that's fine, because mili minsur and l'shliach. He's not being makbid that the get should be written davka by these people. He's not concerned about his bizarion, he's not concerned about any of that. So therefore, we can go ahead and have them write it. We can go ahead and have them delegate it to the sofer and whatever. However, if he says kisru because of the matter of bizarion, then we would say that the instructions have to be given directly to the sofer and the agent. So both cases of the Mishnah are talking about that. And that would all be according to the Meir. That's actually, by the way, though, I think Sam Sofer points out the Mishnah goes into all the details over here where he said they wrote the get and signed it and gave it to him and he gave it to her. You would think once he accepted the get and gave it to her, obviously he doesn't care about the bizarion. Nevertheless, though, the Mishnah is telling us that no, because to begin with there can be the possibility of bizarion, and that therefore he wants that for them to write it, then it doesn't matter even if afterwards he accepted it, that's too late. Anyway. Okay, so you could say the whole Mishnah is a coin to the mayor. If the whole Mishnah is a coin to the mayor, why doesn't the Mishnah spell out that it doesn't work unless he says tnu? Which would fit nicely with the mayor. Now, Ella Hocha, my skin and Deloy Amala Bates Lossa. Okay, you could have another possibility, that the Mishnah is talking about the case where he didn't say to three people. We learned in the previous tariff that the mayor says if you sell it to three people, you've made them three people is enough to constitute a based in. So therefore, that if you tell them tnu, then that's fine. It means it can be delegated. We said according to Rabbi Yossi, no, because merely la mimsu and l'shliach. So fine, the Mishnah is talking about where you only told two people. Even the mayor would agree that that's no good. Unless you said that's no good, even if you said tnu. So two people is not enough to be a based in. Okay, again, the question is, fine, shouldn't the Mishnah have spelled out that you need three people? Hell or no, we can try another possibility. Kula Rabbi Yossi, no, let's try rather saying that the whole Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yossi. And what about the first part of the Mishnah that implies that if he said ksovu is no good, but if he said tnu it would be fine, which we said seems to fit better with Rameir. The Hocha, Maya Skin and Deloy Oma Imru. But no, the case in the Mishnah is that he said ksovu. He did not say to them imru. He didn't tell them tell the sofer to write and tell the agent to sign, which we learned in the previous paragraph that omer imru is different than milu lemimsu and l'shliach. Okay, then the question is, yachy actually omer imru mibor. Like, fine, again, the Mishnah should spell out that term. They should say omer imru. But oid, and besides that, mi moedir of yosi ba omer imru. Does Rabbi Yossi agree by Omer Imru that that's okay? Well, again, we're going to have the discussion that we had in the previous paragraph on this. Well, it's not. We learn later on, towards the end of the sector, that if you have a case where a get was written ksav sofer the aid kosher, or the get was written in the handwriting of the sofer, and he signed it as one of the aidim, and then another aid signed as well, it's kosher. But Omer Rabbi Yemi ksav sofer sheninu, Rabbi Yemi said, now, we're not talking about it was signed by one aide. It was signed by two people, one of whom is the sofer. The Omer of Chista, and then of Chista said on that, Masnissin Mani, who is that Mishnah according to, that says such a thing is acceptable? Rabbi Yossi, the Omer Milu Leminsu and L'Shliach. Rabbi Yossi says that you can't delegate it to others. So therefore, there's no problem where you tell two people to delegate it to other people, and then they might end up, instead of delegating to two other people, they figure let the sofer sign for the Quench of Yossi. Omer Imru is no good at all. Such a thing is never going to happen. Now, the Sakhdat is Mojir of Yossi, but Omer Imru is so fine. If you're going to tell me Rabbi Yossi agrees that Omer Imru is okay, Nafik Mineh Chuba, then you can have a problem. The Zimnin to Amalur Lashnaim, Imru the sofer, Yichtav, Laplani, and Plani of Yachtimu. You can have a case where he tells two people, as we learned before, that he tells them, tell the sofer to write it, tell Plani and Plani to sign. He definitely wants those two people to sign. But they figure the sofer is going to be embarrassed. Why won't you let me sign? Do you think I'm possible or something? They're going to allow him to sign. And yet the husband didn't say that. So we see that the point of that is Rabbi Yossi does not agree that. Wait, one second. Rabbi Yossi does not agree that Imru is okay. So how can you understand our Mishnah in that way? Fine. Necessarily, we have to fall back on saying what we said originally, that the Mishnah is partly split Mishnah, partly Rabbi Meir, partly Rabbi Yossi.